Wind Down with Jana Kramer and Michael Kaufman and iHeartRadio podcast.
You're getting better and better at that.
Thanks, babe.
You're just taking my role there. I love it. So here we are again, and we're going to start pretty much every episode by plugging our own book.
Because
why not?
Well, I'll say this. I was talking to Bobby Bones the other day, and it was so cool because he acknowledged during the interview that pre-orders are so important for especially first-time authors like us, because in order to make the, you know, the New York best time selling list, like it's they take into account the pre-orders, but it's only that first week. So, you know, it's just so important to have people pre-order it. That way we have a chance at it, maybe, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so from now until the time it's physically on sale is really the most crucial time.
Why buy it?
Why buy it? Great question, honey. Buy it because it's funny and it's real and it's, you're going to read things about us that you haven't heard on this podcast, which is surprising.
Like but what? Let's give them something.
You're going to hear, we talked about this when we first introduced it last week, but you're going to hear, you know, each chapter us starting off with a story from our relationship of some kind of conflict, some heavier than others, some super surface level and silly, but some kind of conflict where we're almost positive that majority of you out there that do read it will kind of nod your head and be like, yeah, been there, you know? In one end of the, in either shoes of that relationship. Like, I feel like, you know, most people in coupleship will be like, yep, that's us, or yep, I'm this person, or.
What about if you're single?
If you're single, the same thing, because it's not just about your current relationship. It's about relationships of your past. Be like, oh, I remember when I was dating so-and-so. Like, that was so us, or I definitely did that, or he or she definitely was that way. And then going on from there, the tools that we talk about and that we've learned in our experience can be things that anyone who's single right now can use into their next relationship.
Why did you want to write a book? I feel like I'm interviewing you.
I know, right? Bring it. You know, it took me a while. It took me a while to get comfortable with the idea, because it was first originally it was yours. Mm-hmm. Like we had kind of touched on where you had a book you were going to write and tell things primarily from your side. It was more about your life before us, but yeah. Then obviously
the majority of it was the abusive relationship.
Correct. So once you know, you kind of put that thought in my head and started sharing DMs with me and people's comments about, you know, how the little things we were saying at the time could be helpful, and it has been helpful or can be helpful, I slowly started to see that silver lining. And it's taken, you know, the past year of us working on this project to get to where we feel like the book is the best it can possibly be.
What's one thing in the book where you still struggle with maybe what you wrote?
Because we wrote every word and we're typing like we talk, and it's there's some things where I even call myself out in the book where I feel like a little bitch writing this right now. I feel like an idiot. I feel so stupid writing what I'm writing in this moment. And I literally say that in the book. Like, I feel so embarrassed right now writing this, but blah, blah, blah.
So what's the blah, 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 blah? What do you mean?
Just vulnerable feelings I may feel in a moment. That may seem so, that felt silly, even me writing it about it. I was like, God, looking back on that, that was so stupid. That was so immature. That was so whatever. But that's how it was in that moment. Right. So it was just...
No, I mean, like, is there one thing where, like, you read and you're like, I have to do better at that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of it. I mean, that's the thing. You know, we gotta practice what we preach, you know, significantly more consistently. And for me, it's being consistent with my actions, always being honest and, you know, being soft and being empathetic and not getting mean when I get angry. And so, yeah, there's all of it I can work on. I mean, there's no one's going to master parts of your relationship.
Like, because I mean, I can say the same thing for me too. Like, I, you know, I should pause more, or I should, you know, I'm very quick to to be triggered and to, you know, which is why like the pause should come first. And so it's funny, like when, you know, because we're still editing certain things in our book and we're still having to reread it. And it's so interesting. Like we write it because we've been taught it, but we still don't do it perfectly. And so sometimes I'm like, well, how could we say this if we're not even doing it perfect? And so, but I, that's just what I've, you know, come to find out, that it's, we'll never do it perfectly.
No.
We just do it better.
Right. I mean, therapists have therapists.
Right.
You know?
Even when our therapist is like, yeah, me and, you know, the wife had that same, I'm like, wait, so you still have those? Like, it doesn't just stop? Like,
ever?
So, like, this will continue to be the thing? And but I think hearing that kind of squashed any kind of reality in my brain that it is normal. And even when I was walking with one of my walking crew, it's like, oh, he yells? Like, so it's it's almost like you imagine it humanizes almost like your relationship too, and be like, oh, okay, like, all right. And then I'm like, well, how often does he yell? You know? So, but it's just, it's interesting how, you know, you there's things that we are still trying to do better and learn from. But I think it's great that we can still, which is why I asked you that, because I know for me, I looked back and I was like, oh yeah, I can do better with this. And especially since we're, I don't want to say teaching it, but especially since we're giving the gift of what we've been given to mm-hmm. others, you know, hopefully they can use those tools too.
Yeah. And I think that's the whole point of it. The whole point of this book is for people to realize that they aren't, just like you're saying, oh, he yells too, or she yells, you know, that's the whole point of this book. It's for people to not feel alone in the things that they go through. And the fact that we talk about, obviously have talked about so much of, you know, taboo subjects like infidelity and even things like infertility and miscarriages and all of that. It's, you know, we talk about all of those things and you don't want to normalize that, like, oh, it's just another thing you have to deal with. But again, we're trying to give a gift of not feeling alone.
Sure. And again, for those people that, you know, because I had a lot of people reach out to me being like, well, I'm single, I don't really think I need it. But there's so many things, especially the communication chapter, or being part of a team, or, you know, cleaning your side of the street, which is huge. I'm like, I was like, oh, I wish I had this book when I was single, because there's so many things that I maybe wouldn't have repeated patterns in relationships. I would have looked in the mirror and stopped, you know, even when it comes to like my parents, like I blamed my dad for so long. Like, it's not my dad's fault that like I continue to do these things. It's my fault. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I might have seen certain things, but it's not like I wish I had that gift.
The two of the first chapters, Cleaning Your Side of the Street and Baggage, are chapters that are perfect for people that aren't even in relationships.
Yeah.
It's obviously perfect for people in relationships, but it's almost even better for people that aren't, because these are two areas that the more you know about cleaning your side of the street, the more you acknowledge the baggage that you bring into a relationship, the better prepared you are to be close to and intimate with that person.
Can you imagine the gift you would have given? I mean, I feel like, you know, well, yeah, never mind.
What?
Nothing.
Okay.
No, I mean, I was just going to say, to be able to do your work before you get into the next relationship is such a gift for the other person.
Oh, yeah. And yourself.
Yeah.
And yourself. Because then, you know where this stuff comes from. You know what you're bringing to the table and what you have to deal with. And so you're more emotionally stable for the relationship.
Yeah. But it takes two. You know?
Look, we're just so excited about this, and we just hope y'all give it a chance, because we really think it could help a lot of people.
Yeah, so go to JannaandMike.com to pre-order your copy, and we will personalize a copy if you go to the Parnassus. So JannaandMike.com, and if you want a personalized copy, click on the Parnassus tab, because we are supporting our local bookstore here, and they really needed those sales. And we got a letter from the owner, and basically we saved essentially their store. So we're just,
because we sold 900 copies just to that store within the first weekend.
But I think we want to reach out to any other bookstores. So if you guys have any other bookstores that you know might need the help, we definitely want to highlight some other stores as well, just because, especially during this time, you know, people obviously aren't going to their local bookstores, and we know how easy it is to, you know, be able to just go online. So if you have any local bookstores that you guys want us to shout out and try to get our books in there to have people pre-order, let us know. And just go to the Wind Down Podcast and DM us. Let's take a break and then let's talk about our guests. All right, so we have Nicole Lappin coming on the show later today. Super excited about her. She's the New York best-selling author of Rich Bitch and Boss Bitch. Super excited to talk to her. She's got a new book out right now called Becoming Superwoman, so I'm going to get my notepad and pen ready because I'm super pumped about that. Anything new in your world, Michael?
I just got into cycling.
Yes, you did.
For those of you who do not follow Jana on Instagram. So I just got into that, and I've always kind of wanted to do it because my joints are bad from playing football, and it kind of helps with you know, load bearing and stress relief on your joints, but I've really dove in, haven't I?
You have. Yeah. I mean, you different outfits arrive every day to the door. So you're really going for it. I like it though. I mean, I'm proud of you that you found something that you really like to do, and you've stuck to it, and it's been, you know, something for you that you love. And, you know, we've kind of like how my walks are for me, and we've been able to be like, okay, like when are you walking? When are you biking? And knowing that we both need that for our sanity during this time, because we're still practicing the stay at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's been good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I feel better too, because, you know, you would have your walks almost every day or your workout time, and I wasn't as diligent on my workout time. It didn't really feel like I was getting away. It was just in the garage. So to be able to go out for an hour to 2 hours and ride, you know,
are we going to 2 hours? Because
last week, the like 25 miles, that was, you know.
All right. So I'm going to have to up my walk time then, because look.
Hey, I don't think I'm going to be working to that like 60, 75 mile range where I'm gone for like 5 hours.
Whatever
but
makes you happy.
I've really enjoyed it. And it's one of those things, like, again, I said, I've always had an interest in doing physically, and now I'm finally doing it. Is there anything like for you physically that, man, rock climbing has always been something, or just something like that, that you're kayaking on a regular basis that you've always been intrigued by?
I mean, I remember the last time I went rock climbing, I went with this person and I was just like crying the entire time because I was like, please get me down, because I was so afraid the whatchamacallit thing was going to break.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I mean, it was fun, but not really. I love hiking, and you know how many times I'm always like, I want to hike, let's go hiking. And so that's one thing that I really miss, like not living in Los Angeles, because I love going for hikes.
So do you like glorified walking hiking, or do you like when we went to Blackberry Farms, you know, in Tennessee, and
that was awesome.
We were like straight up hands and knees. The incline was so steep.
That was a little much.
Hands and feet.
But I like the, you know, the Percy Warner hike here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. Like I love that. Because just to be in nature, and I'm such an outdoor person, like I would love to do that more often. It's just hard because, again, we're, you know, we don't really have the help for that right now. So
for sure. I'll be interested on what other things are out there that people have been interested in doing physically. That's just different.
I mean, I want to do volleyball. How many times have I said, like, I want to do sand volleyball more often? Like, if I could do a volleyball game like once a week, I would be the happiest person ever. Like, I just think it's so cool.
That's some good exercise.
I know, and I'm really good at it.
I'm so good. So of course I want to do it. Jana only wants to do things that she's going to be the best at.
That's not true.
You're so competitive.
No, I'm just competitive. I'm really not that good, actually. I'm like the shortest person, so I like can't spike for shit.
Yeah, but you're good support.
I'm a good cheerleader. Yeah. How's the mental game? How are you mentally?
Mentally, huh?
Yeah.
What a deep question.
Thanks.
I'm good. I think I'm just hitting a routine. Like we're kind of in our routine. We're kind of, you know, days blend together, but we're doing our thing. We have, you know, we're RVing up to Michigan to see your family for the 4th of July. And so we're looking forward to that. That's kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel, I think, right now for me mentally, where in another month we're going to be hitting the road and just kind of getting out of Dodge for a little bit.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah. I mean, I think I go in waves. Like, I'm bummed that, you know, we're probably not going to have, I'm bummed on the missed opportunities of this year. Mm-hmm. Because again, like, those things don't come around as often, like the movie and things like that. And, you know, just, I mean, financially everyone's kind of in, well, not everyone, but the people that, you know, are entertainers and stuff and, you know, beyond entertainment, there's a lot of people that are struggling right now. So I, you know, we can't complain, you know, because we can still do this and other things. But I think just having those like missed opportunities has just been a bummer, you know?
For sure.
And like the tour and, you know, all of that has been just something where it's kind of like, that stinks. And so some days I think about it and then it kind of gets me down. But then I positively think, okay, well, look how much time, because I remember in the beginning of the year, I started to have massive anxiety. Remember I said every single weekend I'm going to be gone, whether it's a wind down or it's the movie or it's a show on the road. I was going to be gone almost every single weekend.
Yeah, it was every weekend except for one every month.
Yeah.
So it's like 3 weekends out of every month you're going to be gone.
Yeah. And
either
I just
we or
to have,
you were going to be gone.
Yeah. Like, I just started to have like anxiety about it. And then, you know, me and my girls had planned a trip together one of those weekends. And I was like, I told you, I was like, I'm going to cancel it because I can't be away from the kids this much.
All right.
And now, you know.
God was like, all right, sucker, here you go.
I'm taking it all away.
You're complaining.
I know.
But. I'll take it all. What's completely off subject.
Okay.
But, again, people who follow you know that we like to play games. Mm-hmm. What's a favorite game that we've played kind of during this break that you've just really enjoyed?
Rummy Cube is always a good one. And then I just like the easiness and the fastness of Mancala.
Yeah.
It's just easy. It's just like, meh, let's throw some like these
little pebbles in some little holes.
Yeah, it's like that's just fun.
Yeah, it's easy. It's brainless.
So easy.
There's no real thinking about it.
No, it's just I like that one to just in the middle of games. And then yeah, Rummy Cube's obviously one of my faves for that. And then I really want to play Stratego again.
Gianna wants to play Stratego because she whooped my ass the first time we played it. She never even heard of the game. I used to play it as a kid all the time with my best friend growing up, Eric. And we played all the time. And I bring it out. I'm like, Gianna, you're going to love this game. She's like, fine, I'll play it with you. Whoops my ass. She's like, let's play again. We have not played since. So we need to, I guess, do that.
Hey, what book are you reading right now in your morning meditation time?
How to Be an Adult in a Relationship.
Really?
Yeah.
What are you learning? Tell me more.
It's right now because I started it before I started
Love and Respect.
Love and Respect. So I've been recapping some things. And a lot of it's redundant with, you know, he does like the 5 A's. It's like accountability, acknowledge, acceptance, awareness, and I don't remember the fifth one. But he's just talking about all of those, like, within your relationship and kind of how, you know, you it's his way of kind of saying owning your side, like controlling what you can control. So I'm looking forward to diving deeper into that book and reading newer stuff.
No new stuff yet?
No new stuff yet.
Okay.
No, because I wanted to make sure I didn't skip anything, like just really skim.
Sure.
You know, so I wanted to make sure I'm still grasping the concept of the things I've read.
Anything stick out?
Nothing right now. Nothing that we haven't talked about. Nothing that's really new. Especially stuff that we've brought up before. So, but I'll be in touch with y'all about what I'm learning and how to be an adult in a relationship. All right, we're gonna take one more break before we have Nicole Lappin on and talk to her about everything she's got going. All right, Jana and I are so excited to have our next guest. She is a New York Times bestselling author of the books Rich Bitch and Boss Bitch, and now she's on to promote her third book, which she's going to tell you all about. Welcome, Nicole Lappin.
Hey, girl.
What's up?
Hey, lady. You know, we were on The Doctors together. I don't know if you remember. I was like a segment after you, and then I was hosting Founder Made. and we reconnected there.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
I know I look like a homeless person now, but sometimes when I clean up real nice.
No, same. I have no makeup, just got out of the shower. So this is this is the new look. But no, yes, absolutely. I remember. And so how Rich Bitch and Boss Bitch, when did those come out?
Rich Bitch was my first book, and now we're on the fourth edition, which is bananas.
Wow.
Because people still keep buying it. You know, there is not a Rosetta Stone for finance. And I think a lot of women want to get their financial lives together, but it's really complicated with the jargon and the language. So that came out 6 years ago. Then Boss Bitch came out after that. Then Becoming Superwoman came out. And I may be birthing more book babies. No actual babies yet. Just a lot of book babies.
I love it. How did you get into the whole, like, with Rich Bitch? Like, how did you start off, like, you know, basically becoming that rich bitch?
So I grew up in an immigrant family, first generation American, just used cash, had like a super broken home, needed to start working early on, and I just needed a job. And I wanted to be in TV news. So you go back in the day, there was like no skipping steps on YouTube and whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I went to small markets in South Dakota and Kentucky and tried to work my way up, and I got a job as a business news reporter, and they asked me if I knew anything about business, and I totally 100% lied, and I said absolutely, and I faked it till I made it, and I realized that money is just a language like anything else. And if you go to China and you don't speak Chinese, you'll be super confused. And if you go to Wall Street and you don't speak the language of money, you'll be super confused. But once I figured it out, and I'm the least likely person to do it, like, I didn't want to do anything with money, guys. My boyfriend in high school said he wanted to be a hedge fund manager. I thought he wanted to be in gardening. So, like, I was extremely clueless.
I love that. And then now your book, Becoming Superwoman. So what it says is a simple 12-step plan to go from burnout to balance. So tell me all of that. Like, how did you get to the book? Like, how do I become a superwoman? What do I have to do? Do I write an S on my chest? Like, what? Yes. Tell me all the ways.
I am here for that. And by the way, you already are a superwoman and a total boss bitch. So I ended up getting to network news way earlier than I expected. I was an anchor on CNN and then CNBC and Bloomberg, and I worked and self-prescribed, not drugs or alcohol, but work to hide from that really traumatic upbringing I had. And I ultimately, you know, worked and worked some more, and it kicked my butt. And I had a mental, emotional, physical breakdown that stemmed from severe burnout and an emergency admit to the hospital that made me rethink everything and how I was working. And at that moment, I realized I was trying to be Superwoman, the character with a one-word version who tries to do it all and be it all and be all things to all people. So ultimately, she's nothing to herself. And I wanted to just be a super space woman, a woman who puts her oxygen mask on first before helping others.
So how do you do it, though? Like, tell me, like, what's the first step in doing that and finding that balance? Because I feel like right now this book is an amazing time for COVID, because I feel like a lot of us feel burnt, you know, we feel that burnt out feeling. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is coming at the best time to almost reinvent yourself through all the burnout.
Totally. And the first step is always admitting you have a problem. All my books are 12-step plans, because that is the first step. You know, I did the largest study ever done on women and burnout, and I found that women are reaching burnout and breakdown levels in the 80 and 90% ranges, but only half of us think that that's a problem. So there's a huge difference between actually swimming and just not drowning. And so we're saying, like, oh, it's overwhelming, but it's cool, nothing to see, we just can keep going. And that's where the issue lies. And I think now when we're trying to figure out this new normal and boundaries and balance here, you know, as you guys know, the whole day can be really chaotic, but your morning and evening routines are what you can control. So, you know, if you start your day off with gratitude and not going down email, firefighting rabbit holes, it changes the course of your day. Studies have shown that, you know, gratitude helps us actually look for more of that throughout the day. And then at the end of the day, I used to think, like, how am I never able to sleep? Well, hello, Captain Obvious. Maybe it was because I shined a bright light of my phone in front of my eyeball until I fell asleep. So I think that those are what we can control. Like, we can't control the global economy. It's bad. But we can control ourselves and our own economies. That's all we can control. And any relationship, by the way, you're only responsible. You can only control that 50% when that's you.
So your book, So it focuses on life balance, but also financial balance as well?
Absolutely. And I think the trick is to figure out what the definition of balance is. Because mm-hmm. a bunch of ladies in particular will say, like, I'm off balance or I'm off budget. I'm like, girl, did you even have a budget?
Right.
Did you even have a definition of balance? Or are you just comparing yourselves to other ladies on Instagram who are baking banana bread and feeling bad about yourself? But, like, if that's not on your definition of balance, then, like, then don't feel bad about yourself. That's maybe that lady's definition. But mm-hmm. first, I think it's important to figure out what that looks like to you and stop changing the bar. Because for so long in my career, I felt like I would be happy or I would be balanced when I got there, a certain job or a certain salary. And then I got there and there was almost immediately another there. And so we keep changing the goalposts on ourselves.
I do have a question too about kind of the times right now. Is there a financial mistake that people might be making right now during COVID times?
A lot. And I've never worked so hard, actually. It's like a financial news Super Bowl right now, because women in particular care, because we're reactive in that nature. It's hard to get you to care about finances proactively, but now everybody has to. And so, you know, pulling out of the market, for instance, whether it's with your retirement fund or your investments, is all emotional, right? And there's two adages on Wall Street that are true. Everything else is subjective. One of them is buy low, sell high. So right now, things are more toward the low than the high. Stuff is on sale. So instead of pulling out, I think the biggest mistake is not actually putting more in if you can.
So to put more in is the right thing to do.
If you have a long-term investment horizon, so if you're not retiring in the next 5 or 10 years, and mm-hmm. if you're not putting all your money in there and you're dollar cost averaging, which is fancy terminology for just putting in little bits at a time to hedge for all the fluctuations, then it is a great time, and great fortunes have been made during tough economic times, recessions and depressions and economic downturns.
With that said, though, too, what about refinancing your house?
So if you can refinance, this would be an awesome time to do it. Are you guys thinking about that?
Well, I mean, we got a great rate, but I know that we could actually even get lower now. So I was just wondering if that's something where it would only be like a point something off. It wouldn't be an actual whole number down. So is that worth it or no?
Girl, absolutely. A point something
I don't
down.
See, I know nothing about like he's the 30-year fix, and I'm like, let's do 5, and because I'm always looking at the lower number, like of you know the
I'm
mortgage,
conservative,
and I'm not as much. So okay, that's interesting. I'll have to call
guys. No,
Kev.
Oftentimes we end up spending double the amount we paid for our house just in interest. So if you can point something percent, if you do the calculation, girl, that is going to turn out to be a lot of money. And by the way, some folks are refinancing lower because back in the day, like our parents would think, you know, 6% is an awesome mortgage. Now that sounds really high. And even if you spend more on your monthly payments, but you shorten the term, that could really be great in the long run.
Good to know.
Interest rates have never been this low.
Even if it's like a 0.2 difference. Girl, I know nothing. So that's why I'm like, because I would think like, okay, let's say if a mortgage rate was 4.6 and you can get it for 3.6, like that's different to me. Like that's because that's a 1% difference. But I didn't know if like a point something would make a difference. If it's like,
let me ask you a question.
Answer.
If I was like, hey, can I give you $100 or $1,000? And you're like, I'm not going to take the $100 because it's not $1,000.
Okay. Point made. I love
$100.
It. Okay. Got it. We're going to call the business manager as soon as we're off.
All right, speaking of money and everything, you have this money school challenge they're talking about. Tell us about that and our listeners as well.
So these are challenging times, of course. And, you know, we have so many questions about how to save money, how to budget money, how to make money. And so I put together my money masterclass, which is called the Money School. I was so tired for years and years and years saying, like, why don't we learn this stuff in school? We learn such BS stuff, like, as you guys know, and you probably homeschooling, like, why do we need to know geometry and the Pythagorean theorem? Why don't we learn how to do a budget or taxes or business plan? Like, that would be way more valuable, or figure out how to refinance. And so I was saying that so much that I was just like, okay, well, I might as well just make that. I'll just do it. And so I created 12 video modules and worksheets and quizzes. And then I put all of my templates and everything together in a bundle. So if people do want to get their financial life together and focus on financial literacy, you know, we complain a lot about money, but actually ask yourself how long have you actually done something about it? Like, take the same amount of time that you would have used to plan a vacation or buy boots and just like read some financial book, or it doesn't even have to be mine, or take a class and actually educate yourself about it, because we can't bury our heads in the sand. We can't assume that a man is a financial plan. Like, I cannot stand when I hear that, or I used to hear that at events across the country. You know, I think we didn't learn it in school. We may have had a terrible upbringing. Okay, so we didn't learn it. That's no excuse now. Like, forgive your former self for what she didn't know, but say like, it's not okay moving forward. I gotta get my big girl undies on and handle it.
I think that's so true, because I didn't, I mean, this is, you're gonna like, probably be like, oh my gosh, but I didn't start actually, I didn't put any money into a portfolio until probably just a few years ago, because I didn't know. And like, I was so worried about the number in the account. And my business manager, you know, he was like, you have to start putting money into some kind of like, so you, your money can make something for you. But I was so fearful because of the industry that, you know, I've been in, that I'm like, I don't know if I'm ever going to make money again. And what if that money goes away? I'm screwed. Like, I won't have anything. But all that time that I could have had it in something growing, it just, it's slowly been just annoying me to be like, ah, like, why wasn't I smarter with my money? Why didn't I take more risks? And why didn't I almost bet on myself? Because I, for all those years, my entire 20s into my early 30s, I didn't bet on myself. I bet on uncertainty, and I bet on, you know, things not working out, and I bet on, you know, going in the red again. Because for the pretty much my entire 20s, my bank account would go from red to normal, from red to normal, from red to normal, until really my late 20s was when I started to actually make some kind of money. And it's just, I get frustrated that I never put anything away, because I just started my retirement and I'm 36 years old. So I do get a little, why are you laughing at me?
I love you.
Aw.
I'm smiling at you.
But yeah, so yeah. I'm like, I just wish I would have been smarter. But it's hard to bet on yourself, I guess.
But it's the woulda, shoulda, couldas, and we, you know, we're never as young as we are today, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's never too late to start, truly. And the earlier you do, you get to reap the benefits of compounding interest, which, you know, we have seen probably used against us with credit card debt and how quickly that snowballs out of control. Like, imagine what that can do when it's in your favor and it's compounding. So your money is making money. And the goal could be to have your money make you so much interest that you don't have to work. If you want to work, Godspeed, get on with your bad self. But like, right, you don't have to, or you're not stuck in a relationship that's abusive or bad because you can't make your own money. Like, truly, money is freedom. It's freedom to make the choices you want to make, work because you love it, stay with somebody you love, and don't have money be a factor in the equation.
I love that. Is there, when you kind of look at, you know, someone's situation, what's like the top three things that you're like, it's, you're just wasting your money? Is there anything where you can say like, just get rid of this or get rid of that, or something where you can stop buying this? Is that in the equation, or is it just solely like buying stocks and things like that?
So I don't advocate any sort of deprivation. I think a financial diet is a lot like a regular diet. You know, if you allow yourself small indulgences, you won't end up binging later on. So I don't know about you, but I was on a lot of crazy crash diets in my life, like weird juice cleanses and grapefruit cleanses and whatever. And I was starving, and I ended up in the middle of the night noshing on a big old hunk of chocolate cake because mama was so hungry and so deprived. Like, the same thing goes for a financial diet. If you don't allow yourself a latte, like, I argue against all the financial folks who are like, don't buy a latte. I'm like, no, you need to buy something that makes you happy. That's why we're working and living life anyway. You can't be in like doom and gloom, death, destruction, you know, clipping coupons and have this deprivation mentality. Because when people say, I cut out the morning latte, you would be so proud of me for my New Year's resolution, come like April or May, they say, hey, I bought a Gucci purse because I was so good. I'm like, girl, if you just bought that latte every single day and made yourself happy, you wouldn't need that Gucci purse. Just, I think absolutely allow yourself for the extras, but just have them be no more than about 15% in normal times of your overall spending
plan. I love that. And then what do you tell people that have financial anxiety? So I have, like, I deal with a lot of financial anxiety and fears about, you know, money, and it's, is there something like to help ease anything like that? Or is that normal?
It's totally normal. I have financial anxiety too. I mean, I know a lot. I don't know everything. And it's so understandable. Money is the root of every, I think, conflict. If you really get down to it, it's more the humanities part that's most anxiety provoking. The math part, like a fifth grader can do. It's the idea of talking to your significant other about money. It's the idea of the prenup. It's the idea of getting your friend to pay you back. It's all the emotional stuff that gets in the way. And I would say, you know, the biggest enemy is often between our ears. And sometimes we suffer more in imagination than in reality. So like, you don't open up your credit score or you don't open up your taxes because you're just like in denial. It's like, you want to lose weight. If you don't step on the scale or you don't know the calories, then it's cool because you're just in this denial mode. So it doesn't actually feel real. But once you do it, you know, once you rip off that Band-Aid, then I think you see that it's actually not as complicated and not as scary as you made it out to be in your head.
I like it.
Yeah, great question.
Well, I just feel like, because that's kind of what to what you said, Nicole, like in the very beginning, I didn't want to, when my business manager called, I would decline the call because I was so nervous of him saying like, okay, because I had this awful manager in the beginning of my career and she sued me and she was awful. And so it was just so much like financial stress at that time. And so I just never wanted to talk to him. I didn't want to see the money. I just was always so fearful because I just knew it was like, I was afraid it was going to go away. And now it's like, now it's so almost controlling to a fault because I'm so afraid to lose it. And now I'm like, okay, like, you know, we've lost a lot of money this year with COVID, like everyone else has. And like, how are we going to keep it? And okay, we got to cut down here and we got to cut down there. And we're furloughing this person. And like, so it's just like, now I'm just trying to like navigate how to like not let it completely control my mood throughout the day. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, it's understandable. I think, you know, we talk about everything before we talk about money. I mean, you guys have talked about this on the show, like sexy time, bikini waxes, fertility, like all the things. Yeah. And then I, all of a sudden, when we used to see human beings in real life, I would say to my girlfriends over dinner, like, hey, how much are you making this year? Or how much is in your bank account? And it would be crickets. I'm like, girl, you just told me about your landing strip and you're not telling me about what's in your bank account. Like we have to reprogram ourselves around that. Cause I was like, I'm trying to help you. If we don't talk about it, we're not going to get ahead. It's like trying to price your house without knowing the comp of the area. So I always go first. I'm like, I'll show you mine if you show me yours.
See, I don't know if I could do that. That gives me anxiety because then I would almost be like, I'd almost maybe get jealous, like you're skinnier than me. Or
see,
you
that's
know?
That's interesting though, because even just the other day I was asking somebody, I don't remember who it was, but you know how you phrase those questions, I was like, hey, if you don't mind me asking, like how much did you pay to have this done? Just because I was curious for my
that
own
I get. Yeah.
Reasoning. But still, it's like, it's such a personal thing. Like to Nicole's point, you talk, you know, and with this person I was with, I talk about way more deeper things than, you know, how much this one job cost that he had done or something. But it is interesting.
That is true. It did. I was talking to Sean about something and I said, and it took me a minute to ask her, like, how much did you make on that? Like, cause
right.
Just to see, you know, and it is that it's uncomfortable and they're like our best friends.
Right.
It's interesting. Yeah.
I don't have a problem telling people.
You guys have less of a problem.
See, I don't. I guess it does make me uncomfortable.
Like if someone asked me, like if someone just asked me flat out, "Hey, how much did you guys pay for this?" I'd be like,
"Oh, that I don't care." But I do parent price. I do give a parent price. So I'm like, it's like a couple hundred dollars, and my friend's like, it's $1,000, and I'm like, oh, But here's my thing: I don't buy anything. I don't like to buy. I'm very, very like, frugal. But I like to buy things for other people. So that's where I spend my money. Like
it drives me nuts.
Why?
Because I have to like force her to do something for yourself. To your point, Nicole, like for the latte, for Jana's, she doesn't drink coffee, but for whatever her quote unquote latte is, I'm like, honey, you work so hard. Like do this. It's not a lot. Like it's okay. And she'll come to me because we have a budget that we have agreed upon. If it's anything over this amount, we talk about. And it'll be something under that amount. And she'll come and be like, and ask me like she's a little kid. I'm like, first of all, you're like the breadwinner in this family. I was like, you don't really need to, you know, ask me too much, but I appreciate the respect. And when you do come to me and to discuss it, like, you don't have to ask like that. Like, I never care, you know?
I don't know. What is that? Why do guys care less? Not that they care less.
Not all.
Yeah, not all.
No, I think, you know, it's obviously fraught with so many other emotions. And I think to your point that you might feel bad if somebody's like skinnier or richer or whatever, like that's on you, I have to say. Like, you have to do some work and say, is my worth tied to money? Is it not? And so, you know, you can only control how your reaction is. And so I like to talk about it transparently, because I think that's the way we can help each other negotiate. It's the way we can help each other with best practices. And I go first. So in all my books, I talk about what I made at CNN, what I made at CNBC, what I made for my book advances, because I'm like, some bitch is going to read this. It's like, what did this girl make for this? And so I just put it in there because I think it's important. And I had to put my money literally where my mouth was.
Well, I love it.
Yeah, I respect that. Because not a lot of people do that.
So to find out more, go to themoneyschoolchallenge.com and then also get her book. It's out right now, Becoming Superwoman, A Simple 12-Step Plan to Go from Burnout to Balance. Nicole, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. And I'm going to check out the Money Challenge because that sounds very interesting. I need to be more knowledgeable about my points, literally. Point. Here we go. Two. All right.
Nicole, thank you so much for your time.
Love Yay, it. Thank you. Guys.
Awesome.
Okay, bye. All right. So Nicole was awesome. Super excited. I have an S on my chest. I'm about to be Superwoman. Email Stephanie. I suffered a miscarriage in December 2019. My husband and I were trying for our second child. I have a beautiful son who is a year and a half. And I honestly didn't think having a miscarriage was going to happen to me. I lost the baby around 10 weeks and I had never felt more sad, hurt, and angry than I did during that time. Push forward to today. I am currently 22 weeks pregnant with our second child. Yay, a baby girl. She is my rainbow baby. I love her so much. But honestly, I'm still terrified. I feel myself trying to not get too excited about her because the chance of losing her would completely destroy me. I know Jana and Mike experienced several miscarriages before baby. And I guess I want to know how you let yourself enjoy the pregnancy that gave you a baby. I want to grow this little girl with all my love, and I'm afraid my fear of losing her is keeping me from doing that. Stephanie, I'm sorry you suffered a miscarriage. We both know how that feels. I'm so excited for you that you have your rainbow baby on the way. I honestly wish I could give positive, but that when I was pregnant with Jace, like every single time, this is a little like TMI, but every single time I wiped, I was like, there's going to be blood. Like I was always fearful of wiping and seeing blood. And that's just the reality of like having so many miscarriages of like, it's like, I'm going to lose it. Of course. Even when I was in my, 20 something weeks, I still was just like, when I got to 30, I think it was like, 27 or 28, where they say like the baby has a chance of living. And that's when I stopped being so crazy. But no, I mean, every single time I wiped, I looked to see if there was blood. And I don't know if that's like, I don't want to project that on Stephanie. Like, I want to say, don't worry about it. Like, it's going to be great. But like, I can't really say that.
No, because that wasn't reality for us. And I remember with Chase, how often you would, kind of think out loud to me and say, okay, it's at, so-and-so weeks, they say they can still survive, like, outside the womb. And it was like a countdown in your head for every, like, milestone. So I do remember that. And it's hard not to. It's simpler for men because it's not our body, right? So it's not a conscious thing every single day, every moment, like y'all. So with that, I empathize for women, but it still involves both of you. And for the husband, it's just our job to not, like, I try to do a good job with Jace from what I remember of not diminishing you saying that. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't trying to take that away from you and just say, babe, you can't do anything about that. Don't worry about it. Like, just, I didn't want to minimize your feeling around it at all. I just try to be understanding and supportive. Of it the best that I could be. And so I think it's, to your point, I mean, that's natural for anyone, for any, coupleship or or woman that's kind of gone through that, that's going to be normal.
Yeah. And I mean, I would just say, this is the worst advice, but like, you're so close to that one moment where they can be possibly living out of the womb. So, just know that like at 22 weeks, the chances are so, 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 so small. But again, I can't really be like, just be positive and be happy, because you're a mom and we are going to worry for the rest of our lives. That's just the reality.
For sure. All right, I want to read this one from Shannon.
Okay.
Because I want to hear your response. This is awesome. Baby boy on the way. I'm expecting our first child. I'm expecting our first child. I knew deep down from the second we found out that we were pregnant, he was a boy. And sure enough, our ultrasound confirmed it. I always saw myself having a little girl, mini-me, with lots of cute outfits, bows, playing with Barbies, etc. I'm curious, now that you have Jace, what is the mother-son bond like, and what is it like to be a boy mom?
It's the best. It's the best. I truly did not want a boy. I mean, I wanted whatever we could have, you know, obviously, right, because of the miscarriages and stuff. Like, I was so grateful. But I imagined two girls. And then, yeah, I never saw myself as a boy mom. I didn't know. I mean, we had Jolie first. So it was just one of those things where I didn't really know kind of what to expect. I remember, though, when we had Jace, it was weird because it was this, you know, second time around. I was like, oh, my gosh, like I felt different when I had him. The love, it just was a different kind of love. And so then I started comparing it. I'm like, well, do I love him as much as I loved Jolie when I had Jolie? And it was just, it kind of like played with me a little bit there emotionally. But the love that I have for Jace is so different than the love that I have for Jolie. And it's hard to explain, but just, he's just like, he's my man. Like, he's my little boy. Like, I just like, I'm so obsessed with him, and I just can't wait to teach him how to treat a lady and be respectful. And, you know, I can't wait to teach him how to, you know, skate and play hockey or whatever he wants to do. Like, I can't wait to like throw a ball with him. And he's so much fun. And that bond, like his cuddles are just something beyond my daughter's cuddles. Like, you know, when Jolie cuddles with me, it's sweet. But like Jace really cuddles with me. Like he's just like, he melts in my arms. Mm-hmm. And it's probably just because of the age, but Jolie never did that. Like she'll cuddle, but she doesn't. Yeah,
Jolie never sat there like Jace, and truly, even when she was his age,
yeah,
she would just kind of get up and keep moving. Jace will sit there and like lay on.
He melts in
on
you.
Us. Yeah.
Oh, I adore both my kids, but the bond with the son. All my friends said that. Every single one of my girlfriends said the mother-son bond is something like unlike anything else, and it's so true.
I love it. All right, let's do this last one right here from Lisa. C-section. I've been dealing with the emotional after effects of a C-section for a while now. My daughter is 5 months old. I keep thinking, what if, or maybe I could have done something different to have a vaginal birth. I also feel like the physical part of it is tough too. I was always into fitness, but now I feel like I have extra weight or the bubble above the scar to get rid of. I know Jace was a C-section. Did you feel this way at all? How'd you get through it, and how do you lose the extra bubble above the scar?
Bubble ain't going nowhere. Showed Mike it the other day when I was wearing a bathing suit. I said, oh my God. I was like, babe, you see this? And I was like, look at this really big dip right here and then the bubble above it. And he's like, okay. And I was like,
really, I couldn't even tell.
But I was like, I'm so self-conscious of it. But at the same time, I'm not, because I'm like, it's my mom scar. Like, it's what makes me a mom. I embrace the saggier belly. And, you know, my trainer always says, stop drinking wine and your drink work stuff. And I say, I'm good with the belly then.
I'm good.
I'm great. I don't care.
Bring
like,
it.
I've always kind of had a little belly since high school. Like this, just the bottom part. But I'm just saying like it's, I've never had a natural flat stomach ever. When I'm laying down, I do, but like never naturally flat. And now that I'm a mom, it's obviously stretched a little bit and I embrace high waisted stuff and I'm fine with it. I don't care enough to quit drinking and stop eating pizza and cookies. Like, I don't care enough. And honestly, it's like I'm embracing the mom bod. So I just say, Lisa, embrace the mom bod. Vaginal versus C-section. I mean, sure, would I have loved to have tried? Yes, but we're not peeing ourselves 24/7 when we jump up and down. So like...
Well, you did try, but Jolie had to be taken out.
Yeah,
she did. So that kind of set the stage for the next one.
Yeah, and for the next one, I was like, well, maybe I'll try a V-back. And I'm like,
nah,
I've already got the scar. Let's just go for it. But no, I mean, I think that was God's plan, God's way, baby's way. And you can't second guess that. But anywho, love you guys. DM us on the Wind Down Podcast if you have any questions. And don't forget to go to JannaandMike.com to pre-order The Good Fight.
Tell your friends, tell your cousins, tell your parents.
And tell everybody else.
See y'all next week.
Bye.